Hey, this is Steve from Lifter Puller, and you're listening to the Hood Rat Recap Podcast.
We got bored, so we started a podcast about the best bar band in the land, man. This is the Hood Rat Recap, and we are back. We are your steady stream of the unified scene, all the news and reviews of the band that you love, we love. So let's have a little Diet Cola and maybe a little Lifter Polar. Hello, everybody. This is Stage Right Mike on the mic, and I can talk Hold Steady all night. I can talk Lifter Polar all night. In fact, when I like to talk Lifter Polar, or when I like to talk Hold Steady Heavy, I like to throw up the rat signal. And just like that, the Hood Rat Pack has assembled. And I see you pushing out of the little sewer grate right now is the Unified Scene's very own King of Queens, Gasper. Gasper, how you doing today?
I'm doing pretty good, man. But you know what? I've been trying to get people to call me Eddie Van Halen.
Why is that, Gasper?
Because I want to bust through your speakers like an eruption.
Oh, how's that working out for you?
Not good at all. I can see Kevin giving me the evil eye already. Not very good at all. People keep calling me Tiny Tim.
Oh, my God. My God. Like, I'm at a loss for words, you know? I want to say, like, I really got you, or really you should be running with the devil, which means you were run over by the devil, because that would be way better than this eruption joke that you just made. God damn. I'm sorry to our listeners. I am apologizing in advance.
And that's the sound of our third mic and our producer, Kevin is whenever. Kevin, how you doing?
You know, I was doing great right up until about 48 seconds ago with that awful Eddie Van Halen. I was having a wonderful day. You guys had to do an interview with Steve Barone from Lifter Puller without me because sadly I was traveling, doing some stuff with some people. And then you bring up this Eddie Van Halen thing, which really just hurts my soul. And if anybody's a fan of Eddie, it probably hurts their soul too. But so thanks for that. That might be, I got to go back and listen. That could be the worst Freddie Knuckles. All right, I'm going to just say it now on record. That was the worst Freddie Knuckles you've ever come up with.
I still stand by the peanut butter one is probably the worst one I've ever done. But anyway.
That's true. They're all pretty horrendous. And I know for a lot of our listeners, that's their favorite part. But literally, I'd rather pass a kidney stone right now than listen to your eruption.
Kevin! All right, break it up, guys. We got a big interview today. I mean, this one is huge, and it was a ton of fun.
Yeah, so this was big. I unfortunately was traveling, so for anybody listening who at home who doesn't hear me, it's not because my mic was broken, but I was literally 3,000 miles away the day they decided to cut this. But tell me a bit about what Steve Barone from Lifter Puller had to tell you guys.
I thought it was a lot of great stuff. I was really surprised what he said about when the band broke up, the feelings he had about it and stuff. A lot of insight there that was really reviewing.
Yeah, he was a cool guy, man. It was fun very to talk cool to him guy. And like, why don't we just jump right into it, man? Like, let's just get into the interview.
Yeah. Yeah, that'd be great. Me and the listeners could hear it all at the same time together. So why don't we get into it?
Cash advances and Jenny's back on campus. Can't believe it, it's September. What's the story? All the chicks in her sorority asked her how she spent the summer. Said I had turned on some law firms. Said I got a little sunburn. I saw some labor kid get murdered. And I met this guy, and this guy, man, he got me high. And the drum and bass sounds a lot like Roman thunder. The room looks beautiful, topping off the torch. You don't have to go inside to buy, you can buy it off the porch.
So, Steve, where are you joining us from again today?
Breckenridge, Colorado.
Ooh, is there much? Well, I know they always have snow there, but how's the skiing been this year? It's been horrible out in the Midwest here.
It's awesome. I just went out this morning to rip some groomers before this podcast.
Nice.
Yeah. So I try to get out as much as I can. So I ski about 100 days a year. So it's pretty awesome. I Nordic ski as well. And that's what I race recreationally. And so I have a race this Saturday, a 42 kilometer race with that. So I'm on skis a lot.
Awesome. So we were talking before you got on, this will be the 30th anniversary of the inception of Lifter Puller.
You are right, actually. Yeah, I just had to think about that. Yeah.
You're just realizing it yourself.
Any plans of possibly reuniting? Maybe for this year's Massive Nights.
No, I don't think so. I think we kind of ended on a high note. We did Red Rocks and the Brooklyn Bowl. And so I thought that was a good way to kind of put the fork in it. I don't think that can be beat.
So interestingly enough, I was at the Brooklyn Bowl show and Mike was at the Red Rock show. So
we were awesome.
Both there for
Yeah.
That's
both,
great.
Both yeah. Amazing times.
So Steve, I was going to ask you about that. So like at Red Rocks, there was this moment, like when I think of you, I actually kind of think of Lifter Puller as kind of a visual band just because, okay, we got Craig doing his hand motions like Craig always does. Yeah. But what I think about when your band is when I see you, like it stuns me every time when you're holding the guitar up in your left hand and you're playing the keyboard with the right hand. And when I saw you at Red Rocks, you know, it wasn't really a Lifter Puller crowd per se. Maybe we'll talk a little about that later, right. But everybody just kind of gasped when you did that, when you dramatically jumped up there.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I mean, do you do that out of necessity or are you copying somebody else that does that, or just how did that start for you doing the two instruments?
Well, the two instruments thing. Well, first of all, I raise my guitar up in the air with my left hand because I suck at keyboards. And so I'm just playing a lot of the stuff with one hand, right? if I'm playing with two hands, I'm simply just doing bass notes with like probably one finger on my left hand. And so when Lifter Puller started, I was a really bad guitar player. And, you know, because Craig taught me how to play guitar in college, and I got to Minneapolis and I was, you know, I wasn't very good. And he was kind of showing me how to play some parts and things like that. But they were really simple. I was playing one string at a time and kind of doing these repetitive sort of progressions or whatnot. And so I'm like, man, I looked like, you know, I'd see other bands playing in Minneapolis. I'm like, you know, I kind of look stupid up here playing these simple parts, so I have to do something. So I actually started with stage presence stuff, like marching in place, like Mick Jones or The Clash. And so that was my thing. So like I would march like a lot, but in place and sometimes all show. It was very strange. But I was just like, I'm going to stick to my guns and just like, I'm going to march in place this whole 35-minute set. But then we started adding a keyboard into, I had a little Casio and I started adding in a keyboard to some of the songs, like right after maybe the first record or so. But it was taped to my amp. So I had to turn around, like, so I wasn't facing the crowd when I was playing the keyboard. And so then I eventually got a stand and, you know, I still wasn't very good. So yeah, just adding in some kind of stage presence and rock moves, it was part of my repertoire, because we used to say it's like it's all the right moves, all the wrong notes. It's like as long as you look cool doing something, right? So that was, and then eventually as the band progressed, I got better at my instrument, but I still sort of never really mastered the two-handed keyboard thing. A couple songs like I can do two hands, but not many.
So, you know, I always liked how the band had kind of like an artistic feel to it. And, I felt kind of foolish. I go, it's got kind of like almost a John Carpenter type soundtrack to some of the songs, you know, mm-hmm. And I felt kind of foolish for saying that. But then I was reading an article by Pitchfork and they said the same thing. Do you think that would be a fair assessment to say?
Yeah, I would say definitely. Okay. So I come from I'm from New Jersey. I grew up on Bon Jovi. And so a lot of the song structures that Lifter Puller had, I was like, what do we do? Why are we just abruptly stopping here and making a left turn? Like, why can't we sort of have a chorus and like do a normal song structure? I never really vocalized that because I, you know, I figured like Craig knew what he was doing because he was sort of in the indie world already. And I was a kind of a newcomer to it. And yeah, so it was art for sure. I wish sometimes that we could sort of repeat choruses deep down in my heart, but it's just kind of like, it became our thing that it was just sort of these soundscapes to sort of color Craig's narrative storytelling. And so, yes, that can get a little cinematic.
So now would you say that being that you don't have the repeating choruses and stuff, is that lend to why some of the songs are shorter? Or is it more that you're going for a punk feel?
To be honest, when I look back at a lot of the song lengths, I'm like, wow, I'm like, holy cow. Like, I didn't realize we had a lot of short songs. And I guess, yeah, when you think about it, you don't have this like sort of set structure. I'm going to do A, B, chorus is C, and then right. go to a solo and then maybe do C a couple of times, right? Right. And you get to 3 or 4 minutes. And so, yeah, I do believe that maybe it was attention spans at the time, or like, oh, we can just kind of make a right turn here and kind of come to an end.
Yeah. So that that's actually part of a question. Beth from Vermont, who is a listener of ours and big part of the scene when we're out at the shows, had asked specifically why Candy's Room is so short and how it relates to the Bruce Springsteen song of the same name.
Baby, ain't you heard about the nightclub called the Nice Nice? They got the dries and the knife fights on every other Wednesday night. I can see all the stains in your white tights when you stand in the black lights down at the Nice Nice. We were born in these nightclubs and you make those propositions with your sexy little...
It only relates to the song of the same name, but with the drum pattern at the front.
Okay.
I'm not really sure, because Candy's not really a character in the narrative with Lifter Puller, but I'm not sure what Craig was thinking. We have the Candy Machine and My Girlfriend song, which had to do with Candy Machine, the band out of Baltimore. Okay. Just like, it just sort of, I mean, not really had to do with the band, but I think from the song title came from that band. But there's no, I don't think there's any real correlation to the Bruce song at all.
Gotcha. Okay. Well, to explain our two perspectives, Mike had been around when you guys were, you know, when it was all happening. I came to Lifter Puller through the Hold Steady, kind of in the way that you would come to, like, if you didn't know the Pixies, but you were into, the Breeders, now you're going back to check out the Pixies. Like, same idea. Like, I'm going back to Lifter Puller to see where it all kind of comes from. And there is a lot of correlation there. It's two bands that, I mean, Craig fronting the band helps a lot, but it's two bands that a lot of energy, a different take on how they're making the music and the storyline stuff, the characters repeating and stuff. How much of what Lifter Puller did do you think became what the Hold Steady is?
I think toward the end of Lifter Puller, Craig realized that sort of creating a universe and a narrative around that universe was people gravitated toward that. And so we had our own little noir sort of storytelling encapsulated around the nightclub, the Nice Nice. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, people, I mean, we were at Halloween shows and people were dressing up as the characters. So
that's amazing.
So Craig obviously tapped into something there and just kind of, he was like, okay, I'm going to continue to do some of this stuff. And so, obviously there's like I've seen on the Hold Steady forum, there's a guy that breaks it all down into like goes down the deep rabbit hole on how all this stuff is interconnected. So people love that stuff.
Yeah. I am definitely one of those people.
Yeah. And I'm kind of naive on a lot of the lyrical content of the Hold Steady. Just because I sort of hear the songs in piecemeal. I was in a band with Craig, just hanging out and listening to his voice is not something that I do. Right. And I don't really listen to Lifter Puller songs at all. But I love the shows. When I love going to shows and rocking out with everybody else. And so that's kind of my jam with the Hold Steady.
And then I was just kind of going on some of the more of the artistic stuff. Like one of my favorite parts in a Lifter Puller song is on the Flex and the Bluff. Or in the buff, let me say that again.
Buff result. The flex and the buff result.
Yeah. Easy for you to say, not easy for me to say. But
I came up with that title when we were like just randomly in the studio and it just stuck. It was really stupid.
Oh, wow. So like maybe one of my favorite parts of all is where the eye patch guy, like he's angry and he's going to start talking, but then it's like Charlie Brown's teacher where you got the angry guitar kind of talking for him, you know? I just love that part. How did that part, did you guys consciously think about those kind of moments in the album or did they just develop?
So you're talking about a musical sort of treatment that's happening?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So that's the moment when it almost sounds like somebody closed the door and now we're having a conversation in a room behind where the club's going on, which is an awesome feature of that song.
Made a joke, he leaned in close, and then he spoke, he said. I want nightclub Dwight, dead in his grave. I want the nice, nice up in blazes. I want nightclub Dwight, dead in his grave.
Yeah, I love
right.
that part.
So we made that record with Pro Tools 1. It was tape. We were recording to tape and we were Eric Olson, who is like actually certified in Pro Tools. Now he taught at like some of the music schools in Minneapolis, but this is early on. So we were just fooling around with things in Pro Tools 1. And I forget how it came about, but I'm sure, cause Dave Gardner worked on it too, obviously, but I'm sure Eric came up with that idea like the producer did.
Awesome.
Because we were fooling around with stuff because that song wasn't a song that we practiced in. We made it in the studio. Same with Lake Street is for Lovers.
Okay.
Those were just kind of like, oh, we need some more songs.
So earlier we were talking about some of the bands that you were listening to at the time with Lifter Puller. Like, who would you say influences the band the most? To me, I hear, and I don't know if this is an influence or not, but a lot of Dinosaur Jr. at times.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely. So when we were tour around, Dinosaur Jr., Guided by Voices, Archers of Loaf were, and like even toward the end, and it doesn't have anything to do with us, but Queens of the Stone Age were on our van playlist. Absolutely.
Awesome.
I think we kind of, there was a point there where I think that we would get a lot of comparisons to Archers of Loaf, but like I kind of liked the comparison. I was a big fan. And, I don't know if we're like a, it's hard to explain, but so we came from a scene in Minneapolis, which was kind of, even live, I would call it lo-fi, because it was a scene where if you just had 10 songs and you practiced them and got on stage, people like our band would go see other bands and everyone was really super supportive. And so it's kind of, that's an extension of the lo-fi aesthetic that Guided by Voices had. Mm-hmm. And it's just kind of, you might be rough around the edges with your performance right now, but you put in the time to practice and you put 10 songs together and got on stage. And man, we just love that. And that it was such a great nurturing scene. And I'm not sure that the lo-fi aesthetic translated it certainly did in our first record. That's where we were at. There's kind of a low production quality, but as we got into Burr Holland Studios for Entertainment in the Arts and Fiestas and Fiascos, we were kind of more pro at that point, I would say. Right. We had access to Pro Tools, which when other people may not have. And then we were in the studio that we were like, they graciously just let us come in to like, if Lifter Puller comes in here, maybe we can get other bands to come into our studio, right? And so we had access to just different amps and guitars. It was really cool.
So in the book that the whole set he just put out, Craig talks a bit about Lifter Puller, and he makes it seem like the band was on the brink of just about to break out of, so I guess Minneapolis, Boston, probably New York, at that point, then he saw a point where it could go bigger. What would you say was the reason that it didn't?
I attribute it to two reasons. One is that Craig was our manager and he had to book all of our shows and whatnot. And no one really, I tried to pick up the slack, but I didn't really know what I was doing. And maybe some others did. Dan maybe picked up the slack. But so he was kind of doing triple duty, singer, musician, and like sort of booking manager guy. And so he was fried. And the other reason is Dan was having some physical ailments in his arms because he hit the drums so hard. And I'm not sure if it was technically proficient the way he was playing. And so toward the end, he'd have to stretch his arms out and his wrists for 45 minutes before a show. And we had a show booked at like the Weissman Art Museum on a Saturday. And those two guys had spoken to each other and kind of blindsided Tad and I about like, hey, you know, Craig was like, Dan and I had a conversation. We're thinking that Saturday is our last show. And I was absolutely just devastated. Wow. And so we had a really good show on that Saturday, but like, yeah, I felt, you know, at least Tad and I had conversations, like we really felt that we were bubbling up. Like I thought that if we could do one more record, at least maybe that could really expand our sort of whatever was happening. I don't know if it was a fan base or not, because we certainly became more popular after we broke up. And obviously the whole study had something to do with that.
Right. I still run into people that they'll tell me they like Lift or Puller better than the Hold Steady.
Right.
And I've heard that at a Massive Night Show. So there's definitely something to that.
Yeah. There's a saying, I think maybe Jessica Hopper or whoever said it. We were the last band before the internet.
Yeah. Do you think you were the last band to play in the Jenny Jones show? Because I seen that you maybe posted that online, the Jenny Jones.
I did post that. No, we were not. There was I think that was in 99, I believe. It's listed on the YouTube video. But yeah, there was a booking guy at the Jenny Jones show for a while, like a year or so, that really pushed the envelope with some of the bands that were on there. I know Outkast performed, I believe, like either after us or right before us. Like just on a different show. Yeah. So we went down to Chicago where the Jenny Jones show is filmed. And the topic of the show was stripper wars. And so I guess a good stripper is a stripper that just strips and goes home. A bad stripper is a stripper that hooks on the side. And so the good strippers... Okay. We're mad at the bad strippers because the bad strippers are more popular and taking all our money from the customers or whatnot. And so that was the topic of the show. And of course, people are arguing, get into fights, kind of Jerry Springer-esque. Jerry Springer was filmed just down the hall. A couple things I remember from that is there was a woman, a stripper named Chocolate Ecstasy. And... Jenny Jones, for some reason, there was talking to her and it became apparent that she was a rapper. And so like right on the spot, she goes, well, maybe the band can play a beat for you to rap to. And I'm like, no, like this is not in my wheelhouse at all. Right. But Tad and Dan just kind of played because Dan, you know, obviously Tad was our bass player at the time. They just sort of played this kind of just simple beat. And I didn't participate in that at all. And so that was kind of an interesting segment. And then Patrick Costello from Dillinger 4 was our roadie for that. I don't know. He wanted to have a cigarette and couldn't smoke anywhere in the studio. Couldn't find a door. I think he was kind of drunk too. So he got like, I think he got placed like by producers, like, put him in like studio jail where like, so cause he was bothering some of the other guests. So a guy would be in the green room and he's like, he's just a normal guy. He's like, you know, my wife's mad that I go to the strip club. And so Patrick got into his ear and is like, man, when you go out there, just tell her how you really feel, that you're a man and can do whatever you want. So he's like really riling him up. Right. And so, and this is all the while he's like jonesing for a cigarette, kind of drunk and just being a nuisance. And so he got put, I believe he just got put in studio jail. They locked him in a room or whatnot. And the other sort of thing I remember from that experience was we played a lot of our songs. We eventually played the Bears as our song, but they, I forget what other song that we wanted, they wanted us to play. It was maybe Man Park, but they didn't like the lyrical content of it. So we switched to the Bears, which is obviously about a bear and a cub. It's sort of about a gay romance.
And in playing throughout the show, Lifter Puller will play the Bears from their CD, Half Dead and Dynamite. Here they are.
They're after, well, we're a part of this. It's the 4th and 14th down to 10th. Mortalize a microfish. Barcode a document. Tell you to act on the corner. You're talking off a soda. Take a dollar and a warrior. That's like an ignorant reality.
So we did the Bears, which is really short, but we did other songs, and we had to, this is kind of a challenge. We had never done this before. We had to play like bars of our songs, and we had to look across the studio at a guy that he would put his arm up when we were supposed to wrap it up, but we all had to end at the same time.
Oh, wow.
And so we're just doing instrumental Lifter Puller songs, and a lot of us used Craig's lyrics as cues sometimes because – obviously, a lot of times we didn't know what the hell he was saying until we heard it recorded. but you know, like he's got like movements, right? Like, oh, when he does this, like it's we're going to a change, right?
Right.
So we had to like on the fly all stop at the same time, like on wherever we were in this in song. So that was just kind of a challenge. It was kind of like, man, I'm starting to sweat up here. So it was a fun experience.
That's awesome. So Tad joins the band later. How would you say that changed Lifter Puller, or did it change Lifter Puller?
Oh, absolutely. Tad is like, I call him a real musician, right? he joined in Halloween of 1998, and that was probably, technically speaking, a terrible show, but like we were all dressed up in different costumes, and we didn't go on stage till 1 a.m., so we were kind of lubricated. And there was a big rope. We were dressed as pirates. There's a big rope swing off of our stage. Like maybe we got through, you know, half the set. And then toward the end of the set, it was just chaos. just again, all the right moves, all the wrong notes, right? Like I remember taping down some notes on my keyboard, swinging out on a rope swing and then coming back, but taking out Dan's drum set. And so people are trying to, as it, where the song's going, people are trying to reassemble the drum set and all this stuff. So awesome beginning, like in terms of just chaos. But yeah, I remember being in Lifter Puller, we had Dave Gerlach, who went to Boston College with us, and awesome dude, awesome drummer. And Dan Monick was playing bass for us at first. But he's really a drummer. He just decided like I can play bass, and we were just doing simple bass lines. But when Dan switched to drums, and his big hit, big hard hitting style, Craig and I were like driving home from practice and going, wow, man, this is awesome. And so we were super psyched. And that same thing happened when, Tad replaced Tommy because he had to finish his PhD. Mm. Lifter Puller has two people that have gotten their PhDs, by the way. Not me. I'm stupid. But when Tad came in, he just elevated the band so much. We felt like a real rock band at that moment in time. And he was doing like leads on bass and just fooling around in practice, right? Yeah. So the dude is very talented, and he just really elevated to the band where it gave us all confidence. So we could have that. You need a little ego. And so it was a lot easier when Tad was in the band.
So like Steve, I was at the 2016 Red Rocks reunion show you guys had. And so I don't know if you lived in Colorado at the time, but what was it like? I mean, I know what Red Rocks is watching a show. What was it like being on stage and seeing 10,000 people? And is that the biggest crowd you ever played in front of?
Yeah, it's the biggest crowd I have ever played in front of. Obviously, they weren't there to see us, so we were just one of the openers. But we went after Lizzo. which is kind of cool. So just for your listeners, it was a Minneapolis-based show. Yeah, so we were on the bill with Atmosphere, Brother Ali, and then it was us, and then Lizzo opened the show. And yeah, it was sold out, not for us, obviously. And then, 10,000 people were in front of my face, which was... okay, so leading up to this, you know, you don't have the magic as the band anymore, right? Because it's like you're really just trying to play your parts and get through the songs and stuff like that. So, you know, I think during the performance, it's kind of like just play the parts, don't screw them up. And so it was awesome to be in front of those people. It was a little nerve wracking, like when we were coming out onto the stage and getting ready to play and dealing with some of the equipment and stuff. But it was pretty slick. They had all of our stuff sort of like, at least the, I think their drum set was on like on wheels or something. So they just kind of pushed that out. And then the stage hands put your amps out, but I had a Fender Twin and I never really played that in Lift or Puller. And it was on 10. It was cranked. And I was like, because it was hard. Because when you open shows, like you don't get all the bells and whistles of a good sound check.
Right.
And so, you know, and plus you're on a big stage. You don't know what to ask for, like in the monitors, right? And so Craig had the idea, let's just stay really close together. And so we can kind of hear each other. But it was still like, I'm just going to play we didn't have inner ear monitors or any of this stuff. And so it was just kind of like, just, I could play my parts once the song started without any input from anything else. And so I was just trying to get through my stuff, I guess. I don't know how much I was playing off like the others for a dynamic, you know, that's when you have the magic as the band. I think the magic had gone away for many years, right? So just playing the parts. And I went to LA before Red Rocks to play with Dan, the drummer. And so we just sat in a studio. We rented some studio time and it was just me playing my parts and him playing his parts, because we were the two guys that maybe didn't have the 10,000 hours of studio or stage time. So we sort of like, we were the two dudes that like just simply hadn't been in front of, I just hadn't played as much as Tad and Craig had.
Gotcha. Now, do you still play?
Just on my couch in my, like my apartment. Yeah. So I did I called my middle-aged rock band with Stiff Rock Moves, called the Ronnie Buxtons. And we put out a record in 2015 called Getting Together. And that's really pop stuff with repeating choruses and kind of like the Cars a little bit. So I wasn't playing keyboard. I was just playing guitar and singing, which I felt I found really enjoyable. It was so fun to, I didn't know if I could do it, sing and play the guitar at the same time. But I kind of stole, so Craig, I don't know if he still does. He probably does all kinds of tunings. But in Lift or Puller, he played drop D. Do you guys know what that is?
Yeah,
sure.
When you drop the E string down to... So you can make a power chord with one finger. Just trying to make, you know, kind of getting into, you know, Keith Richards plays in an open G. So he can kind of, you can slide your finger. Just easy ways to play guitar, right? Right. And so I kind of found that really fun and enjoyable. I was like, this is awesome. And so we put out a middle-aged rock record in 2015, and then like some other members like were having more kids and we just kind of broke up.
Oh, well. It seems like life kind of gets in the way of rock groups a lot of times is what, is what I've got to learn in here.
It does. Yeah. And it's like, you know, we were a 5-piece band and if like we had all 5 members there, that was like a joy. Oh, wow. You know, it never happened. It's like, oh, we're out of another guitar player tonight or whatnot. But I had done a lip sync comedy act during Lifter Puller and after it called the Hawaii Show. So up until like right when we broke up, I still had this like silly lip sync performance art thing I was doing. I had completely lost my identity as soon as Lifter Puller broke up. I was like, because that was my identity, really. I was Steve Lifter Puller, right, in Minneapolis. That's it. I worked dumb part-time jobs, blah, blah, blah. And so I sort of threw myself into the performance art thing, and we actually did a couple East Coast tours. I mean, my set was on a CD or a DAT tape, and we just played it over PA systems and sort of had a fake rock band on stage and eventually evolved into like doing like SNL type of skits, but they were audio based. And we would open up shows for other rock bands and whatnot. And I had a producer help me with some of the music production stuff. So it had a very 80s feel and it was all mixed in mono, so it could come over rock and roll club PAs and just blast people. So, and we opened for Nickelback, which was like a highlight of our career.
Wow.
Even though, you know, obviously I'm joking because Nickelback's not my favorite, but we got booed. We played at Prince's old, the Quest Club, and we got booed because I heard from the crowd, because we had inflatable guitars and I had big foam core Marshall stacks that we would change costumes behind. And we would take mic stands and just clamp the big foam core fake Marshall amps behind, right? They're like 6 feet by 6 feet. And, or maybe 8 feet by 8 feet. And I heard in the crowd, "Hey man, they're not really playing their instruments." And it's like, we have inflatable instruments. Like if you don't know, there was a guy on that stage, my friend, who was just, we had a keg on stage and he had solo cups and he was just pretending to pour all of his beers. And like, dude, this is a joke. Right. And so they were getting really mad, and like 15 minutes into our set was like 30 minutes, like booing starts. Right. And this comes from I came from the scene where everyone is super supportive of whatever you're doing. Right. And so we opened this Nickelback show and everyone's just booing and not being supportive. And of course I jump into this crowd and I go right to the guy that's like booing the loudest and I'm like begging him to punch me, right? So he'll, because some bouncers came up and I saw him out of the corner of my eye. I'm like, if this dude punches me, he's going to get kicked out of the Nickelback show. He really wants to see Nickelback. So I'm like, I'm going to screw with him. But he never got to that point. And so we finish our set. I'm in the dressing room and this really shook me. I had never been really booed before. And so like the rest, and at the time the Hawaii show was, there's maybe 8 other members in this just doing performance art, just being silly. Right. And so I'm just sitting in the dressing room all by myself, kind of dejected. And the promoter comes in and he's like, and I knew him cause I did a backstage catering job. So I set up dressing rooms backstage for stuff part time. And he's like, "Steve, I think you should leave the venue." Like, cause they were just like, "You just got to get out of here. Like you guys need to go." So we played a show and got kicked out. Wow.
So you got kicked out of a Nickelback
on my own show.
That could be the best thing that ever happened to you if you think hysterical. About it. Then you didn't have to hear Nickelback, you know? So.
Right. But every 10 years or something, this happened in 2000, right? Or something around there. But like every once in a while, I'll post the bill like on Facebook or something. It's like, "Remember this?" They're like, "Dude, we were there. It was hilarious." It's so funny.
So of the Lifter Puller stuff, what was your favorite stuff to play?
I would say Secret Santa Cruz for sure. I think that was dumb. And then Space Hump in 1999. And
nice.
Let's Get Incredible was always just, we would end a lot of shows with that. It was either that or Nassau Coliseum.
Right.
But a lot of shows had very explosive endings with Let's Get Incredible. It depends on the environment. It's just like sometimes there's magic with that, sometimes there's not. But yeah, just those three songs are my favorite to play. I felt Secret Santa Cruz was cool because I had mentioned that Craig was kind of burning out a little bit toward the end. And I just kind of remember, and I could be wrong, I remember like talking to Tad, like, let's just do some extra work here and maybe go into the practice space. And I think Tad and I kind of worked on that a little bit before we brought it to Craig and Dan or something. And obviously it changed up when the band got in there, but, and same kind of a little bit with Space Humping. But that was kind of a funny thing. I was playing around where place where I lived, and I was kind of fooling around with that riff, right? Think about what you've got compared to what I've got. Now what do you think my girl wants? My girl wants. Think about what I've got compared to what you got. What do you think my girl wants? My girl wants. What do you think my girl wants? And my roommate just started singing Danny Dan Marino ain't no Dan DeVito. Danny Dan Marino ain't no Dan DeVito. So it was just kind of like we were just having fun with that. And then I'm like, I didn't bring that lyrical content into but yeah, for the most part, just toward the end of our, like, those are my favorite songs to play, I guess.
And Steve, I don't know if you're aware of this, but I heard it on a podcast. So, you know, everything on a podcast is true. But back in the early 2000s, First Avenue actually closed for a couple months, and they thought it was going to close forever. And on the final night, the final song they played was Lift a Polar versus the End of the World, End of the Evening.
I've never heard that, no.
Yeah. So that was the final song they played at First Avenue when they thought it was closing.
Yeah, because I think that was like was it a potential like bankruptcy situation?
Yeah, and the mayor was a big fan of the place, and he stepped in, Mayor R.T. Ryback, and he saved it. Now they run half the city. They run all the music venues, and half of them in Minneapolis and half in St. Paul.
Exactly, yeah. I mean, First Ave was great. Obviously, we played in the entry the most, but I never heard that story. That's very cool.
Well, thank you very much for taking the time to talk to us. This was amazing.
Yeah, awesome. Thanks for having me.
Is there anything you might want to plug?
No, not at all. I'm just out here in Colorado skiing my face off.
Yeah, I can see the skis on the wall behind you there. You're living the life, man.
Yeah, those are my old ones. I don't like those anymore. They're boring.
Crank up your amps, man.
All right, man. That was a great interview with Steve. I was really so appreciative that he gave us the time. It was great to hear somebody who was around for those days of Lifter Puller, which was so formative to the Hold Steady. And that was awesome, man. I had a good time doing that interview.
Yeah, we almost had to scrape him off the slopes just to do that interview. He had just left Breckenridge Slopes, and he still had the little pink cheeks, I think, from... And if anybody wants to know what he looks like, look at our promo picture from like 30 years ago, because he looks the exact same.
Yeah, and even if you go on his website, he's got a lot of photos of him skiing. And it was just interesting to hear him talk about, you know, producing his comedy lip sync act and the Ronnie Buxtons, the band that he did after Lift a Puller, and the album Getting Together they put out. It was, you know, it was really interesting to hear. I was sorry I wasn't able to be a part of it, but you guys did a great job, and it was an awesome, awesome interview. Good job, everybody.
Well, you were missed. All right, so moving right along, we're going to play another round of Diamonds in the Drain 3.0, and we're changing the rules again. So, Mike, what are the rules now?
It's our show. We could do whatever we want. But I will say, these rule changes are not because of us. Mike, why don't you tell them what happened?
No, a listener suggested these rule changes, and it was so, so smart. I was like, why didn't we think of that ourselves? Unfortunately, I lost the listener's name because... our Facebook poll got corrupted, and I had to delete it. And along with that, I deleted his identity. So if that was you, please direct message us so we can get you out a windbreaker or something. But anyways,
We have windbreakers? I do not have a windbreaker.
I don't even have a hood rat windbreaker.
I said or something.
All right. Fair enough. So
but his suggestion was, since we did the last three albums and we had all the winners from there, that we should just do the first three albums this time, and then we can always do the middle three albums later, and then we can take all the winners and have a super championship round at the end. So
that's smart. That's very smart.
Very smart than what we thought of.
That just shows that our listeners are smarter than we are, and as we always say, the show is also there. So this change, which was a smarter one, thank you to whichever listener suggested it. And as you can see, you're smarter than we are because we deleted it. So we don't even know who we're talking about. But thank you for being a part of the show, whoever you are.
Yeah.
All right. So this is going to be Diamonds in the Drain 3.0A.
He's fully entertained. He's bleaching out the blood stains. He's got diamonds in the drain. She said that she was coming, but she mostly just made hard, fast noises.
So we're going back to just gold, silver, and bronze medals again for the three songs off the first three albums.
We're only talking about Almost Killed Me, Separation Sunday, Boys and Girls in America, in case anybody listening isn't sure of that order.
Yes.
We're giving them to you now. Okay. That's our.
Okay.
Roll the 12-sided die.
I'm going to roll the 12-sided Dirty Dozen D&D dice.
Dirty Dozen. Just don't get three, because we did three last time.
All right, I'll try not to.
Guys. Anything but a three.
All right, here we go. Wish me luck. And we got an 8. That might be a heavy hitter. We got to look that up.
All right.
All right. 8.
I can already say this is going to be fun because I do know.
Ooh, I'm looking those tracks up. Those are going to be tough.
I know. And you know what? Looking at it now, I'm glad we dropped the fourth album because that would have made this one even tougher at 8 when you get into that.
Agreed. So. All right, Mike. So what do you got for track 8?
So for the first album, Almost Killed Me, track 8 is Sketchy Metal.
She only pays attention to the prices of cigarettes. She says she hopes they'll get cheaper. She only takes the pick-me-uppers to counteract all the put-me-to-sleepers. She used to be a receiver.
Nice.
So what do we got for Separation Sunday?
All right, Separation Sunday, track 8 is Don't Let Me Explode.
Which leaves me, Boys and Girls in America, and a personal favorite and weekend namesake, Massive Nights.
The guys are feeling good about their liquor run. The girls are kind of flirting with the setting sun. We all kind of fumble through the jitterbug. We were all powered up on some new upper drug.
Nice.
So we got another Sophie's Choice brewing, I think, guys.
I mean, I think that's always going to be the case on these records. There's so few songs that are not great songs that it's going to be the thing every time.
And just to recap from last week for the last episode, for anyone who wasn't paying attention, Separation Sunday had first place because your little hood rat friend got 8 points. Boys and Girls in America got second place with Hot Soft Light with 6 points. And Almost Killed Me came in third with Barfruit Blues with 2 points. So let's see how it goes this time around. Mike, what do you got in your top three this time?
This is a lot tougher than we think it is. So I'm going to start with, okay, let's go bronze. So bronze, I almost got these could go in any three order. So for bronze, I'm going to go Sketchy Metal, just barely a bronze. Like, I mean, it's a good song. I mean, it's got some crazy lyrics in it. Like, she went through a skater phase. She went through a raver phase. She went through a razor blade phase. I mean, the whole song is just jam packed and awesome. Love the guitars on it. But it's just, it's going up against some great competition. And then silver medals really gives me pause. I don't know who to go with, but I think I'm going to surprise everybody and go with Massive Nights. Now, I love Massive Nights. Don't get me wrong. It's, I think it's one of the most hold steady songs, and, you know, and I love Boys and Girls in America. And that's one of the premier songs off there, but, I'm sorry, just Don't Let Me Explode. That song is just so powerful. It's kind of a slower song. Thought it might be best if we hang around the upper Midwest. Jackie Onassis said Dallas ain't safe for Catholic shit. And then we got the end where she said Charlamagne got caught up in some complicated things. So, I mean, that song's just jam. Just got too many killer lines for me. I got to go gold with it. I hate putting Massive Nights down at silver, but it's got to be done, guys. So that's my order.
Oh. Wow. All right. And that, what do you got? Mr. King of Queens, Eruption himself.
Yeah. So this is a tough one. I think I got to go with, for the bronze, Don't Let Me Explode. And that's a rough call because I do love the song. It is, it's a nice point in the set. It's, you know, it features the keys, and you got to love when you have a Franz song. It's definitely intricate to the storyline, which is one of my qualifications. But amongst the three, it's mostly, it doesn't get the silver because Sketchy Metal for me is a great song. I love that song. It's one of my favorites off that record. I love the guitar work on it. I mean, it's he wails on that, man. He really does. And I love the line, like, is there any more appropriate line to the fans of the Hold Steady than the Jesus rolled his eyes when his dad made Jesus jokes line? Like, that cracks me up every time. It's such a dad joke to tell. I mean, it's just perfect. So yeah, Sketchy Metal for the silver. And then how do you not go with Massive Nights for the gold? I mean, if the NFL was going to play a national anthem for Hold Steady fans, it would be Massive Nights. That's our song, right? We build a whole weekend around it. It's huge at the shows. It's one of the best songs off that record. It's definitely the goal for me.
Wow. My turn.
Yeah.
Which lets me... I actually, I will start with the gold this time to not give away any secrets. I will go gold as Massive Nights, all the obvious reasons. When we've talked about this game in the past, for me, I also look at how the song plays live for me. And how can you not? You can't deny what Massive Nights is at any Hold Steady show when you're in that crowd. So, I mean, that was the easy gold for me on this one. It gets a little dicier with silver, bronze, and I agree with you, G. I'm going to go with your setup. To me, Sketchy Metal is the silver. First off, I'm biased because it talks about a publicist, and being I spend my life as a publicist in entertainment, I am completely biased to it, and so that's why it's my silver. And I love Don't Let Me Explode for the story it tells, but just the fact it's a little bit more of a slower tune compared to these two, I just think that's why it would be the bronze. And I will say that we're down to three is not four. If we would have had to leave one off in a foursome, I probably would have had to leave Don't Let Me Explode off. So, you know, I know it's hard to say, but when you're looking at it with the other song that was in the mix at the time, I got to go with that. So for me, it's gold, Massive Nights, silver, Sketchy Metal, bronze, Don't Let Me Explode.
All right. So what does that do to our numbers?
It's weird because I gave Don't Let Me Explode a gold and you guys both went bronze on it.
So. Yeah.
Well, listen, these songs hit everybody different. Like, that's the beauty of this game. It's if you watch what goes on the Facebook, on the Twitter, and the conversations that get started, it's like everyone's got their own favorite. Everyone's got a different take on it. And that's the best part of it.
And that's why I think the game is fun and it resonates so well. And it's actually... I kind of like it a little better with this original format because I didn't like leaving a song off because I think there's a song such as all in their own way. And, you know, when you look at the scores now for this week, it's really a two-way tie because there's a tie for silver and gold is clearly Massive Nights because both Gasper and I had it as our gold and Mike had it as our silver. But Don't Let Me Explode and Sketchy Metal are both tied at 5 points each this week. Oh, wow. So really, it's really just a first and second place for the way the score works with the way it voted, Chris. So with that in mind, if we break it down, Boys and Girls in America is in first place after Two Diamonds in the Drain with 14 points. Separation Sunday is in second place with 13 points. So it's literally nipping at the heels. And then Almost Killed Me is in third with 7 points. But we know that's going to catch up as we get into some of these other songs that exist in that universe. But
at some point, we got to do Knuckles. I mean,
well, that's what I was going to say. I was just going to say it's a knuckle fight between Separation Sunday and Boys and Girls right now with a 1 point difference.
So right. It looks like Massive Nights is going to move on to the championship round along with last week's little hood rat friend.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be wild to see how it shakes out for the rest of the record. I mean, they both had the same 8 points. Your little hood rat friend last episode had 8 points, and this episode Massive Nights had 8 points. And 2 weeks in, we have not all agreed on our gold pick so far. So we'll see if that happens at all or when it gets there. Yeah.
It's because the songs are too good. We can't agree. They're just all too good.
That's all too good. But that's going to do it for us for this episode of the Hood Rat Recap. Great job on the interview with Steve Barone, guys. Diamonds in the Drain. Glad it's back. I like our original format. Thanks to the fan who gave it to us. If you like what you hear, as we say every episode, we do this because you guys listen. And it's the fact that we know you're out there engaging with us keeps us going. Give us a like, a follow, tell your friends. Every episode has been consistently doing better, and we really do appreciate the support. Gaspar, why don't you tell them how they can track us down?
Sure. So the best way to track us down always is going to be our link tree, and that's linktr.ee/thehoodratrecap. That's the best place to go for all the social media for this episode and all our episodes, and you could find where we're streaming just about anywhere. One more thing also before we get out of here. So by time this episode airs, I will either shortly be on my way or already on my way with to England for the Weekender shows. Super excited for that. Hoping to see a lot of people out there. And all you folks over the pond, if you see me out there, I would love to buy you a beer. Like, come see me. Come, let's have a chat. There's a couple of people who've been on the podcast. I'd love to see you guys. So please keep an eye out for me.
Here's a little trick game we're going to play. If you go up to Gaspar and say the word eruption, he will buy you a free drink that night. The code word is eruption.
Eruption. Like, we got a code word.
I like it. I like it. I'm also going to have some stickers and we came up with some pins that came out really cool. We'll be giving those out. Do have a limited amount of them, but come see me. I'll be happy to give them to you.
You know what you should do while you're over there? You should call into the SpeakPipe with fans to do play-by-play live updates on SpeakPipe. And Mike, why don't you tell them what they could find out about SpeakPipe?
Yes, if you'd like to leave us a voicemail on SpeakPipe, all you have to do is go to the show notes, click on the link, and talk into your phone and leave us a little message. And I'm just going to say, by the time this comes out, we are going to have some polls. So you can participate in Diamonds in the Drain. We're going to name off who you guys pick as winners also. So we're going to have polls on Facebook, Twitter, Spotify, and I think I even put it on Instagram last time. So we're going to have 4 polls. So.
Oh, yeah, which reminds us, I guess on our Twitter poll for the last episode, we actually had a first place tie with the people that voted, your little hood rat friend and Hot Soft Light tied. And then, interestingly enough, one for the Cutters came in third, but that's no longer around because we banned it for... Performance enhancing. Yeah, I knew you.
Performance enhancing. Yes.
Yeah, he had one for the Cutters do a piss test and it failed. So now it's out. It's in suspension for a couple of weeks, but it'll be back soon.
All right. Well, that's going to do it for us. I'm Gaspar. That's Mike. That's Kevin. And that was the one and only Steve Barone from Lifter Puller. And us guys and all you guys and gals, we are all the Hood Rat Recap. Carrot party shoes. Get your eruptions.
Danny Dan Marino ain't no Dan DeVito. Danny Dan Marino ain't no Dan DeVito.